Hello, folks. TFG and Mike here. And before we get to episode 118 of the Masters of Grayskull with Optimus Solo and myself, I wanted to put this before this episode because I thought episode 117 was the last episode we had recorded, and I thought I would have to record a special content update. But it turns out I still had one episode in the can with episode 118, so I'm putting this here. This will be the final episode of the Powers of Grayskull series, Masters of Grayskull, until further notice. Karen and I are moving over the holidays. And this is the last episode that Kevin and I recorded. So yeah, yay. I don't know when the podcast will come back. I'm not sure when we will be getting settled out on the West Coast, up in the Pacific Northwest. I'm not sure about anything right now. All as I know is, as of November 30th of this year, my computer will be in storage for at least 2.5-3 months. So it might be until March of 2020. I want to thank everybody on behalf of myself, on behalf of Kevin, on behalf of the Geekcast Radio Network, for listening these last 7, going on 8 years of this show. It means a lot. Thank you to everybody who has listened, who has downloaded, who has followed along. Thank you to Tim Silvers. Thank you to Arch Designs for all of your comments and your reviews and everything else. It's been a long journey. It's been a good journey. Hopefully, in the next new decade coming up in the roaring 2020s, we can close out this podcast and put a period on it for now. However, until then, I hope everyone has a wonderful Thanksgiving. I hope Optimus Solo has a very happy birthday because I'm releasing this episode on his birthday, November 23rd. So send him at Optimus Solo on Twitter all the birthday wishes you can, folks. Hope everyone has a wonderful holiday season, whether you celebrate Christmas, Kwanzaa, Hanukkah, whatever. Merry Christmas, Merry Merry, Happy Happy, whatever the hell. I can't believe we are now at the end of another decade. Wow. And Powers of Grayskull series has been online since 2012. So we've been around for a good majority of this decade. Yes, there have been hiatuses and everything else, but it's been amazing. It's been a joy, even in the stuff that I didn't enjoy, if that makes any sense. New adventures almost made me quit this show. But we're almost at the finish line, even though we have to take this minor hiatus here. I can see the end is in sight. Thank you to everyone. Thank you, thank you, thank you. And now, on with the show.
This is Man at Arms, and you are listening to the Masters of Grayskull.
Thank you, Mr. Gary Chalk, as Man at Arms from the 2002 He-Man and the Masters Universe cartoon series for giving us that promo. I'm, of course, TFG, and Mike joining me is Optimus Solo. Hello, sir.
Hello.
We just want to put this at the beginning of every episode for Masters of Grayskull. We dedicate every single episode of this to the memory of Dean Steffen. Dean, who is the writer, story editor, all that kind of stuff on the 2002 He-Man series, passed away May 15th of 2018. And not only are we doing this because we're finishing our Powers of Grayskull series podcast, we're also, I feel at this point, doing this in the memory of him because the stories that he helped create and build for this series, it revitalized the MOTU franchise, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's unfortunate that we didn't have a chance to ever talk to him before the show, but we can at least remember him as we move forward.
Absolutely. And now, on with the show.
I am Adam, Prince of Eternia, defender of the secrets of Castle Grayskull. This is Cringer, my fearless friend. Fabulous.
Hello,
This is Optimus Solo, and welcome to the 118th chapter in our Powers of Grayskull series. With me for this journey into the Masters of the Universe franchise is TFG1 Mike. Hello.
Hello.
Oh my god.
Well, we have Snake Men today, so...
So that means you got a burp?
That's right. I haven't done a burp on air in a long time.
I know, I was so pleased about that. now I've lost all ability to be classy. All right, are you ready besides burping to return to Eternia, sir?
Yep.
On a side note, before we announce the episodes today, maybe some business to take care of, we did get a mention.
That's right.
From another He-Man podcast. Why don't you tell the listeners about that?
So, since we started this show 7 years ago, off and on, I have been trying to get on to the official He-Man.org. It's He-Man.org website. Their forums to interact with other... They call them He-Fans and She-Ravers. Whatever, that's their thing. That's cool. To interact with them and tell them about the show and whatever else. Well, all of a sudden, 5 months ago, just as I'm about to go into brain surgery, Val Staples, the leader over there, Val Staples has been in comics since 2001. He's done a lot of official and unofficial stuff with Mattel and with everything. He's got his hand in all the pots. He does a podcast called Roast Google Dinner. And people might be scratching their heads listening to this saying, what the f*** is a Roast Google? If you remember, back in the Filmation series, they talked about Roast Google in several of the He-Man episodes when they were having dinner, lunch, meals, whatever. I think there was a whole Thanksgiving episode, if I remember correctly. I don't remember, right? Mm-hmm. So anyway... On the latest episode, as of this recording, now this has been out for a while, so as we're recording this, episode 175 of Roast Google Dinner just came out, or came out as of this recording, because this will be out way later than when we're actually recording it, and they were talking about they were putting a spotlight on other He-Man podcasts around the net. Behind Master's Cast and Longevity, we are number two.
Yeah.
They didn't rank them or anything else. They just went by who was around the longest, and Master's Cast has been around the longest, apparently, at 7 years. Seven, almost 8 years, we've been around the second longest.
Yeah, and they had some... And you could tell that it wasn't just like looking up He-Man podcasts and mentioning them. At least two of the people that were on that podcast had listened to multiple episodes, it seemed like, based on what they were saying. They had nice comments about what we get into and what we talk about.
Yep.
And they did a pretty decent job of describing what we do. Luckily, the second guy did correct him that we do more than just the Filmation, that we have covered everything.
Yeah.
But it was nice to be mentioned on that for sure. And hopefully a few of you are listening now because you listened to that episode. So welcome to the Powers of Grayskull. This is probably like 2 years ago, though, because you have to go through like 117 episodes to get to where I just said welcome. So welcome in retrospect.
Okay, that's another thing, and we're going off on tangents here because my brain is mush and I don't care about the format right now. That's the other thing. What I want to know is, when people subscribe to podcasts, are they like me and go back to that very first episode, whether it's an episode zero or an episode one, or do they listen to the actual most current episode first?
I can tell you what I do. I have tried catching up with or, you know, checking out other podcasts, whether it be movie podcasts, whether it be cartoon podcasts, whether it be wrestling podcasts. And typically what I do is I will first listen to episode one. And then, depending on how that goes, I will just continue on in numeric order. I guess there could be a thing where you would listen to episode one and then you would listen to the most recent and then decide if you're going to go back. Yeah. I think the only ones that I don't go in order are some of the the one wrestling one I don't go in order because there's like 200 episodes total and it's covering a long range of span of time. And so some of the stuff I don't feel like I'm going to be as interested. So I bounce around based on topics.
Right.
And then as I check off episodes that have been listened to, you know, as I go back through, I might catch some of the other ones, and then eventually I'll catch the ones that I have the least amount of interest once there's no other ones to be listened to. So that's probably the only one I jump around, because it's not, you know, there's no need to go in order. I feel like with a podcast like what we're doing, you're either going to go through all the Filmation episodes in order,
right,
or you're going to start at when we started this series, or you're going to start at the She-Ra series, and you're just going to go and listen to the whatever series you're interested in.
Yeah.
But other than that, it wouldn't make a whole lot of sense, I don't think, to bounce around. I did want to quickly comment too on one other thing they said, because they had mentioned that it was a podcast done by people that are not necessarily in the fandom, so to speak, or in the He-Man community. And that's not to say that we are not as diehard He-Man fans as maybe some of the people in the community are.
What they meant was that they're not, like, we're not as omnipresent on their for, like,
He-Man. Well, we're not as active in their forums, but we're also not attending PowerCon. You know, we're not doing all those things. But most of that's a logistics thing that we're just not able to,
from either
a financial or a time standpoint.
Yeah.
And also with what we're trying to do at both Geekcast Radio Network and just in general with our interest, is we try to do multiple things, so we're not pigeonholed into one genre or one franchise. Yeah. Granted, we have spent more time on He-Man than anything else outside of Transformers, but that's not to say that we're not huge fans. I just wanted to throw that out there.
Oh, yeah, no. Like I said, I think what they meant was more so of, like, we're not on the .org forums. We're not on, like, we're not...
Although I should be, because a lot of those sites need some updating as far as plot synopsises.
Oh, boy. Well, maybe we can talk to Val about that, because I'm seriously trying my hardest, and I think I've got him convinced to come on the show at some point after we end the 2002 series, or before we end the podcast, or before we put it on a hiatus, or whatever we're going to end up doing it, because...
Right.
At this point, I don't know. I know that we have a plan, folks. The 2002 series will end at episode 121. We have a plan for episodes 122 to 125. I know Kevin is trying to twist my arm and break my leg to review the She-Ra Netflix series.
We got a new He-Man series coming, too.
Well, yeah... I don't know. Like you just said,
we'll come back and do both of those later on in the future.
Later on in the future, I agree to. Right now, continuing this podcast after we are ready to be done, or at least I'm ready to be done with it for a little while. Like you just said earlier, we do multiple things, we do multiple interests, so we're not just pigeonholed into one thing. After 7.5, almost 8 years, I'm old, I'm tired, and I need a retirement from Grayskull.
We are the second longest running He-Man podcast, Mike. We can't stop now. I'm just kidding. So anyways, thank you for mentioning us again to those guys. Check out that episode, and you can hear some other references to other podcasts, and you can get a lot more He-Man fix while in between, while you're waiting for episodes for us, or once we get to 125, you can, you know, tune over to one of those guys' podcasts and check them out in the meantime. But in this episode of Masters of Grayskull, we're going to be giving you our thoughts on the next three episodes of the series: episode 30, which is entitled Rise of the Snake Men Part 1, episode 31, Rise of the Snake Men Part 2, and episode 32, The Price of Deceit. So we hope you're ready, because once again, it's time to go back to Eternia.
You cannot do this! I am Sela, brother to Zodak, and ambassador to the Eldar!
Silence! The Elders are weak. Soon, all of Eternia will fall before us.
No.
Another meal for our king. Take him!
Warn the Elders!
First up today is episode 30, Rise of the Snake Men. And since this is a two-part episode, we're going to cover these guys together, and then we'll break and we'll come back for episode 32. So, Rise of the Snake Men Part 1 and 2, they aired November 8th, And November 15th, 2003, written by Stephen Melching.
Yay!
Both episodes. And in the first one, it says, for a plot synopsis, in a desperate effort to stop the return of the Snake Men, the Masters of the Universe seek out the aid of the evil warriors, but Skeletor looks to capture the heroes when they arrive. That's what we're going to talk about first, and then we'll kind of go into the plot as the halfway point for the next one, and then we'll kind of go from there. So, what did you feel, or what did you think of this beginning of Rise of the Snake Men?
I thought it was awesome. I mean, in general, I'm not a fan of snakes, but, I mean, I know the Snake Men are part of the Master's lore and everything else, but I thought it was awesome because you have the continuing story of Cobra Khan and all his scheming that he did a few episodes earlier in, like, season one and the beginning of this and beginning of this second season here. So I dug it. I thought it was great. And then after a while, once they get to the battle part of it, I'm like, this is really cool, but I'm just going to shut my brain down while I'm watching this carnage, because there's not really any story being told here. Because, again, you have battle scenes, you have fight scenes. There's, like, unless General Ratlor or Cobra Khan or even King Hiss himself, unless they're revealing their plot as they go, there really wasn't much, like, discussion here.
Right. So basically, I mean, we have Cobra Khan and Evil Lyn trying to aid the Snake Men and getting King Hiss and their army to return, etc. And we have the Skeletor faction, and then we have obviously He-Man and the Masters section. So we have three different kind of competing groups in this episode. Some things that I thought were funny. I thought Cringer had some funny moments in this episode. Little rodent fear. Mm-hmm. We got new transformation and battle armor for He-Man in this episode.
I hate it. I like the new transformation, but that battle armor is dumb.
Yeah, I don't like the battle armor either. I think the transformation is fine, and I think I get the battle armor because that was something that obviously was done, you know, originally in the toy line, etc., and in the, you know, back in the Filmation days. Mm-hmm. But I just don't necessarily care for the look of it as much, I think, in this one. I think that's my main problem. But it's there, and it's going to be there for a while, so, I mean, it is a thing now. I thought there was a cool, like, future vision with the palace and Snake Mountain and Castle Grayskull, where they were kind of, like, showing what could happen if things were not dealt with properly, if the Snake Men were to come to power and King Hiss was to rule over all of Eternia. I thought that was kind of a cool little, almost like apocalyptic view at what could happen on Eternia. Zodak showed up. And this is one thing that you need to know if you're just getting into the He-Man fandom or just starting to watch He-Man cartoons. Anytime Zodak shows up, guys, it's almost a sure sign that you're about to watch a good episode.
Mm-hmm.
If Zodak's involved, chances are it's a good episode. And we get to look at more of the Snake Men. One of them that always stands out to me is Snake Face. It is such a creepy design on that guy.
It is.
That character always freaked me out. Even, you know, what, I wasn't that young when this show came out, but even the toy and some of the, I mean, he was around even though he didn't make the cartoon originally. He was still a thing. You know what I mean? He was still a toy or in the comics or something, because I do remember seeing him as a child. But this is the first time I got to see him in animation, and I was like, man, they captured the creepiness of that character design perfectly. Second rule, watch your back. Indeed. there's some funny moments there. We get to see under Triclops' eyes in this episode, so that's something I don't ever remember seeing before, getting to see under his gear there.
That was very awesome, yeah.
Yeah, and then, did they just kill Merman? I mean, no spoilers, but I'm just saying, like, I didn't remember this from the first time I watched through this series when I was rewatching this episode, and then they just, like, completely annihilated Merman, and I was like, oh my god, I guess one of my favorite bad guys is dead now.
Well, so everybody gets, basically, I think it's Snake Face, or...
Yeah, Snake Face.
Okay, so Snake Face is basically the Medusa of the snake people.
Right.
And basically turns everybody to stone. And turning Skeletor to stone is too much. He has to get swallowed. I'm jumping ahead. He has to get swallowed by a snake. Well, anyway, point is, they basically had Merman turned to stone, and then somebody tapped him on the head, and he just crumbled away.
He's in pieces.
Yeah.
And then this episode, obviously, the part one ends with a pretty good cliffhanger with Zodak. So I thought it was a real good setup for this whole two-part episode. I thought it was cool seeing more of the Snake Men. I think it's cool introducing that third faction that you don't know how things are going to go. You don't know who's going to double-cross who's going to be loyal to who. Mm-hmm. You don't know if He-Man and the Masters are going to have to befriend and form an alliance with Skeletor. You don't know if, you know, what's going on with Eowyn exactly. So, I mean, there's a lot of cool questions, and then we get a lot of cool battle sequences throughout these two-parters. So I really enjoyed the episode. What else did you have as far as things you liked or didn't like?
Okay, I'm between snakes and spiders, I'm kind of deathly afraid of them, as anyone should be. So all the Snake Men stuff is just kind of a little creepy. I understand, and I would have to go back and actually do research on this, but I'm fairly certain the reason why He-Man's snake armor was introduced was not to give him more power. It was just because they probably put out a snake armor He-Man action figure at the time.
Right, it was part of season two.
Right, and they wanted to incorporate, because let's face it, like, other than protecting his right arm and allowing him some sort of snake-like grappling hook out of his hand, that armor doesn't do nothing. It doesn't do shit.
Well, that little like, it's almost like a fireplace thing, like a I guess a poker, but it's more like a grappling hook. But that thing seems to come in handy a couple times. But yeah, this is season two, so there's going to be new versions of some of the toys. So this makes sense, and season two is all about the Snake Men to give He-Man some type of snake armor.
Yeah, it does make sense. I just wish they gave him some other kind of snake armor, because it's just stupid. I like the fact they show the transformation, and I believe they showed it originally where Adam is growing. Like, it's not just Adam becoming He-Man with a flash of lightning behind him. They actually show his muscles, his legs, his this, his that. They show him transforming, not just a flash of lightning and boom, hey, here's a muscle-bound guy in place of the wimpy teenager kind of thing.
Right.
I like that. But the armor, I want different armor. I want, like, you know, I don't know, some sort of protection. Like, yeah, I get it. It's metal. It's whatever. But it's only protecting one arm. It's not like, I mean, that's like saying I could become He-Man and put snake armor on my arm that's my cerebral palsy arm. It's still going to look stupid.
Well, I'm not going to go there. Some trivia for this episode, besides what we've kind of already mentioned, but first appearance of Squeeze, first appearance of Snakeface and Tongue Lashor, as well as the first full appearance of King Hiss, all happened in this episode. First appearance of, obviously, He-Man's snake armor, like we talked before, and the first time, like we said before, we see Triclops' visor, how it's connected to his eyes. What did you think of Squeeze, Snakeface, and Tongue Lashor?
I love Tongue Lashor. I've always loved Tongue Lashor ever since I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
Squeeze and Snakeface, they're all right.
The only one of the toys that I had as a child that was a part of the Snake Men was Rattlor. I had his action figure, which was really cool, and pretty solid. Like, it was a decently big figure. His tail did have the rattlesnake part to it, so that was kind of cool. But I always wanted more of the Snake Men action figures, but I only had Rattlor. So, as far as who stood out in this first half of the episode, did anybody kind of get any award-worthy performances for part one for you?
Skeletor, easily.
Yeah?
Because he's not just going to bow down to a former supposed leader, whatever King Hiss thinks he is, like the true ruler. He's like, unless you force me to do it, I'm not going to bow to you. And of course, he has the little snake thing wrap him up and has him on his knees after a while. But seriously, right. Skeletor not giving up on his convictions and not wanting to give up on his scruples, that's definitely Power Sword worthy.
I got one for all of the Snake Men because I like that they're here and I think they're cool. I also am tempted to give one to Eva Lynn because I do think that she is somewhat making the right choice. Whether it works out or not, and whether the execution goes through or not, obviously we will see as we go forward. But if you're just looking at these two factions, mm-hmm. on one hand you have Skeletor, and on the other hand you have King Hiss. Arguably, you could say that they're neck and neck as far as, you know, who's better, who's more powerful. It seems like King Hiss might be a little bit more powerful, but Skeletor also has some things going for him. So, I mean, that might be a toss-up. But when you go to the rest of the ranks, I guess, the Evil Warriors versus the Snake Men, the Snake Men are far more formidable. They're far more ruthless. They're far more intelligent.
So, that's like, if because, you're, okay, the intelligence, like, ruthless and formidable, I will say that's because they are a army of all in one. Like, you look at Skeletor's Evil Warriors. Hell, you look at Too Bad. Too Bad can't even, you know, tie his right. shoelace without hitting, like, Tuvra and Bad, whatever, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
like, and all the other evil warriors, other than Evil-Lyn, who is actually being the smartest one out of all of them, you're right, Beastman like, scratch right. his head, and Merman's like, well, as long as it has fish in it, or, right. you know, what? Like, they're not, whereas the Snake Men, they're all the same species, they're all snakes, they're all, I don't want to say beholden, but they're all, you know, loyal to King Hiss. They're all loyal to the end goal of them ruling Eternia and taking Snake Mountain back.
And they have a structure. I mean, you know, generals and lieutenants or privates or captains, whoever else they know. Yeah. We know they got a general, and there's other, you know, people amongst them that are right. ranked. So, I mean, it just seems like if you're going to go with a side, like, that's the side that you should probably align with. So I don't blame Evil-Lyn for kind of trying to side with them at the beginning. Obviously, she's not given full information from one of the characters, which we'll get to in a little bit. But overall rating for this episode, for me, it's an easy 5. What about you?
I got to give it a 4.
A 4?
I got to take a point off because that armor is ugly.
Oh, Lord. This is a great episode. This is deserving of the highest.
It is. It is a great episode. I'm sorry, though. That armor doesn't just... It's just ugly and stupid.
I mean, I don't like the armor either, but I'm not going to knock the episode for it.
It's a point. It's still a good score. It's not like it's not like I'm giving it a 2.
It should be perfect.
King Hiss, we've got to move.
We're going to need...
I know. I'll catch up as soon as I find Cringer. There you are! Forget the rodent. We're after snakes.
Yes, Prince Adam. And Grayskull's power shall reach out through the ages to better prepare you for what may come.
How?
You shall see upon your transformation to He-Man.
By the power of Grayskull!
All right, part 2, having overthrown Snake Mountain, the Snake Men seek the power of the Elders. After allying herself with King Hiss, Evil-Lyn informs him of the power within the walls of Castle Grayskull. So basically, in the last part, King Hiss has overtaken Skeletor, so now he sits atop the throne of Snake Mountain. We see Snake Mountain transform into the 3 snakeheads instead of the 1, and he's about to do away with Evil-Lyn, but Evil-Lyn talks about, you know, the power of Castle Grayskull, etc., the Elders, sorcerers, etc. So... he lets her live. This is also where we get to find out that Cobra Khan was lying to Evil-Lyn the whole time, and regardless of all the promises or things that he said to Evil-Lyn, he has no power within this group. So that didn't do well for her, and she was a little pissed off about that. So we have King Hiss making his way with his army to Castle Grayskull, and He-Man and the Masters are going to try to stop that. Meanwhile, Skeletor and all his evil warriors are all stone and, you know, not present to do anything. So what did you think of how this two-parter kind of culminates in this part two?
I think it's very interesting. I think it's something that, like, there are certain things you kind of see where it's going. Mm-hmm. And I kind of saw a little bit where the whole Evil Inn angle was going to go, but the rest of it, I was like, oh, that's a nice surprise.
Right.
You know, oh, that's great. And what I love is after King Hiss and the Snake Men are defeated and Skeletor gets his staff back, how he basically unstonifies everybody. And Merman looks like he just kind of, he crumbles up. And right. Then, you know, he's obviously himself again. What I find most interesting about the two-parter overall is how they dispose of Skeletor. Where he's smart enough to know, oh, well, my eyes are closed. And then Evelyn's like, phew, he has no eyes.
Yeah, that is funny.
I thought that was, I mean, it wasn't meant to be funny, but it's like, I thought that was just ingenious on their part. I thought that was just super fun.
I like Zodak kind of being this almost anti-hero figure, even though there might be some parts where you could say, oh, you know, he was overcome with his vengeance and his, because we did learn that King has killed his brother. But I still like the fact that he's kind of still this like Lone Ranger, this wild card that you don't quite know. He's in it mostly for himself, but also for the protection of, you know, the universe, etc. So I like him as a character and what they do with him here. I find it funny that Evelyn, you know, obviously at the beginning finds out she's not getting what she thought, but then does end up to save herself. But then this episode kind of turns into a cool progression of these epic battles. So, like, if you're a Marvel fan or a DC fan or, like, whatever, you're always waiting for, you know, oh, what if so-and-so had to fight so-and-so? Who would overpower who? And who's the strongest person in the universe? And who's could best Superman or whatever? And we get a lot of that in this episode. So, first, we get a duel. Well, obviously, you have the showdown. It's not really a showdown, but you have the interaction between Skeletor and King Hiss. So, obviously, King Hiss one-upped Skeletor towards the end of last episode into this episode. So, we get that kind of. But then in this episode, we get a duel between He-Man and Zodak. So, that's something that you're not expecting because they're both good, quote unquote. So, it's kind of interesting to see them actually have a battle with each other and kind of a fight together. In which He-Man prevails and then convinces Zodak to kind of come with them and do it together. He doesn't need to do this on his own. He's fighting a whole fucking snake army, so he shouldn't do this on his own. Then we get a clash between King Hiss and the Sorceress. And that's crazy. Because, number one, it happens inside of Grayskull.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, you have the Sorceress just sitting on the throne when he walks in, somewhat bewildered or looking like she has already been vanquished almost, because it was her power against King Hiss's power to try to break the spell to get inside of Grayskull, which was not going anywhere but spending a bunch of their energy, and then Evelyn helps King Hiss and pushes it over the edge so that he can come in. So it looks like she's already beaten. She's sitting there, and then she looks up, and her eyes are like Zodak's eyes, where they're not, or whoever, where they're just white. Where you can't see anything. I know Zodaks are black usually, but it's just kind of that clear circle or whatever. And then she like busts out some power that's even destroying her own castle while she's also trying to destroy King Hiss. And then they go back at each other. We see her flying and fighting. We see the snake stuff that King Hiss can do. It's a very cool animated sequence.
Yeah.
So we get another duel like that. Before I keep going, what did you think of the He-Man Zodak duel, and what did you think of the King Hiss Sorceress duel?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was great. I mean, the action in this show and the way that the animation is done for the action scenes and for the fight scenes is very, very well done. I think it's interesting having the Sorceress go up against King Hiss and having He-Man and Zodak fight yet again.
Mm-hmm.
You'd think that they would be on the same side by now, but that is what it is.
Meanwhile, just on a side note, while King Hiss and the Sorceress are fighting, the rest of the Snake Men are outside fighting the Masters. So you also get some shots and some kind of sequences where they're showing off some of those duels, which is cool only for me for the fact that it does show off some of the Snake's individual powers.
Yeah.
It tries to highlight He-Man's snake armor a little bit, but you get to see Squeeze doing his thing. You get to see Rat-Lord doing his thing and Tongue Lasher. Like, you get to see all of them doing some of their individual powers. So that's kind of cool in the kind of this background of also this King Hiss and Sorcerer's duel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was very cool.
And then it leads us to yet another showdown. So we've already had Zodak He-Man. We've already had Sorceress and King Hiss. King Hiss does overpower the Sorceress and sting or bite her, inject her with venom, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
And then we get Zodak versus King Hiss. So it's like we took one from each one, even though it wasn't the two winners. It wasn't He-Man against King Hiss. It's actually Zodak against King Hiss because yeah. He-Man had promised Zodak that he would let him do King Hiss if they all work together at the rest of it.
Yeah.
And that's interesting because, again, it goes into the Crystal Caverns or the Crystal Cave or whatever you want to call it. And the best part of that fight is how it culminates with Zodak walking out on top of Castle Grayskull. Holding mm-hmm. King Hiss above his head with both arms outstretched and being like, here's your leader. And in some type of like fucking gladiator style move, just tossing him off of Castle Grayskull.
Did he toss him into the abyss or did he just
bounces off of the castle a couple times and then just falls into what we can't see.
Okay. So, but basically again, going back to Filmation, I would like to think, and especially looking at this series, that Grayskull is up on this thing. So there must be some sort of abyss. Castle Grayskull here and Castle Grayskull in Filmation, there is no moat or anything around it. It's just an abyss. Like,
yeah, we see it next episode, actually. I'll talk about it when we get to the next episode.
Yeah, so I thought that was super cool that he just went up. Because I think this is the first time anyone's been on the top of Grayskull this entire series to this point.
Right. So as far as other things, Jesus Christ, what are you doing?
Moving.
As far as other things here, I thought you were falling off of Castle Grayskull there for a second. But the only things that I might nitpick about this episode is we have this epic clash. We know the Snake Men are formidable. We know King Hiss has a history of ruling and is very powerful. He's overpowering the Sorceress, or at least trying to. So I get that Zodak is going to work together with the Masters. My question, though, is where the fuck are all the other Masters? Like, if this is going to be this big of a battle, why do we only have, like, Stratos and Mechanek? Like, where's Cyclone? Where's Roboto? Where's Ram Man? Where's Moss Man? Like...
Yeah, that was a little much that they weren't there.
They should be here for this. If this is supposed to be this big of a battle, it was literally like five Masters and Zodak against the Snake Army. And then the only other thing, I enjoyed all of the epic battles, you know, like I outlined before, the three big power showdowns and who has the most power. The only thing that I question is, if you're following the sequences, even though He-Man is the only one that doesn't get beat, because Zodak gets beat, by He-Man.
Right.
Sorceress gets beat by King Hiss. King Hiss gets beat by Zodak. He-Man's the only one that doesn't get beat, even though he only has the one showdown. But it almost is trying to show that Zodak is more powerful than the Sorceress. Now, I get that the Sorceress was already kind of going into it like not as full power or not at full strength, but by having her get beat by King Hiss and then Zodak beating King Hiss, are we supposed to then take away that Zodak is more powerful than the Sorceress?
I think so, because...
See, I would have liked there to be something that kind of either aided him, like He-Man helped him or something, because that would have also done more with the moral where they were trying to get into this whole, like, teamwork and help each other out. You know, don't... Vengeance and going off on your own is not a thing. Like, if you were beating... If him and King Hiss were going back and forth and back and forth and whatever, and then He-Man just did, like, one little thing that helped him, it would have helped justify the fact that he was able to beat King Hiss to me. But I still don't think I have a huge problem with it, but it was just something that I was like... Is Zodak more powerful than the Sorceress? I don't know. So that was kind of my one question. But I think this is a great two-parter. I think this is probably, if you put these two episodes against any two episodes that we've talked about, they'd probably be in the top, two or three two-part things that we've talked about. I give this one a 5 again. I don't know about you.
Yeah, there wasn't too much here. I still don't care for the snake armor on He-Man, but there wasn't too much negative here. I think the thing about not, having the rest of the Masters there is...
Well, it's not the end of the series, so I guess they could be saved.
Right. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Maybe they were protecting the palace. Who knows? I mean, whatever.
Buzz off, even? Couldn't even get Buzz off?
He
flies.
He's too prideful. He's too busy with the purple giant. For me, I will give it a 5. I did very much enjoy this a little more than the first part. And like I said, even though I still don't like He-Man's snake armor, I'm only going to take a point off for one part of it.
Yeah, and I also do have a power sword to give out, and that is to Stephen Melching for writing a great two-part episode. So I think this one is phenomenally written, phenomenally animated. We get some cool battle sequences, and we get some cool backstory and visuals that we'd never seen before. So I think this is a great two-parter, and Stephen Melching is probably one of the main reasons for that.
Absolutely.
So, all right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about episode 32, and we're going to find out what is the price of deceit, Evil-Lyn.
Prisoner inside these walls. I cannot help you, my daughter, but I will contact one who can.
Last up today is episode 32, Price of Deceit. Air date November 22nd, 2003. This was the last day of my 21st year on this earth. Written by Larry DiTilio. Having been revealed as a traitor, Evil-Lyn is being pursued by Skeletor and the Evil Warriors. At least that's how the episode begins. So basically, obviously, like we said before, Evil-Lyn had aligned herself with the Snake Men. And now that Skeletor is back in power and King Hiss has been thrown off of Castle Grayskull, which we forgot to mention last time, but all the other snakes just jumped off after him.
Yeah.
They just fucking lemminged it off of the damn bridge to Grayskull and fucking went into the abyss with King Hiss. We know they didn't die, but anyways, they all jumped off of there. But Skeletor's back in power, so now obviously Evil-Lyn has to come to a reckoning with what she did. So she's on the run. The Evil Warriors are after her. Couple things. We get to see Evil-Lyn with no helmet on, so that's very interesting both in present day and then also in flashbacks, because it's going to go through a whole bunch of flashbacks and backstory where we get to see crazy stuff. We get to see the first time that Evil-Lyn came into contact with Keldor. We get to see Keldor becoming Skeletor. Mm-hmm. And things of that nature. We also obviously get to see Evil-Lyn's father again, which is the faceless one. Yeah. Get to see Evil-Lyn back in the day with the whitish hair, blondish, but mainly white hair. Mm-hmm. And then current with white hair until she puts her mask thing back or her helmet thing back on. And we're basically just seeing the faceless one trying to save his daughter, and then Evil-Lyn trying to convince Skeletor that she is back on his side and she's always been loyal, blah, 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 bullshit. But that's what she's trying to do. One other thing that is, I just wanted to bring up, because you mentioned it in the last episode as far as how the castle was set up in this series, we do get to see what I've never seen before, which is an aerial view of the castle towards the end of this episode. And it shows a 360, like everything around the castle. So you can see that it is basically floating in the middle of nothing. And there's that one little like half bridge type land jut out that the drawbridge would connect to. So that is something cool that I've never seen before. So I thought that was interesting. But what did you think of the Price of Deceit and all the kind of the Evil-Lyn centric episode here?
Oh, I loved it. I thought it was great. I thought it was very interesting. I knew this episode was coming. This episode is much like how the Council of Evil two-parter and The Last Stand are. The same thing with the Return of the Rise of the Snake Men two-parter, and then this episode. They're basically a three-part. Like, this is the aftermath, and just like,
yeah, it's, you know, like an epilogue.
Yeah. And I love that they did this. I thought this was absolutely great. They didn't just go to another... And again, this series, for the most part, is sort of serialized. Not all of it is, but the majority of it is. And when they get into that continuity stuff, which I love, you know, the only... Like, you couldn't open this show and have Orko juggling whatever. You know, you couldn't do that. You couldn't have Orko in his garden, you know, playing chess with Mossman and Roboto or whatever kind of thing. You had to do what they did. And, you know, things have consequences.
For sure.
The episode, Price of Deceit, you know. And
It's interesting, too, because we get to see, like... I know a fan probably has already done this, but that's not official. So, like, I would like to see like a power ranking of all the different people. I'd like to see where the Faceless One ranks as far as the power hierarchy. I know right now he's trapped inside that that tower or whatever you want to call it, that structure, and he can't leave. So he has to do some other things in order to help out his daughter, and he does actually seek out He-Man to try to help Evil-Lyn, which He-Man does, which is crazy. He-Man's basically coming to the aid of Evil-Lyn multiple times in this episode. Yeah. But I would like to see like where Faceless One's power ranks, because obviously that's where Evil-Lyn gets most of her power. And also a couple of things that this episode kind of sneaks in as some side touches. Number one, it shows that the Snake Men are still alive. It shows that they're still plotting and they're still doing their thing. But it also, when it shows the completion of Skeletor's origin and explains the source of his power and how Keldor became Skeletor, we see that that comes from none other than Hordak. And the way they did that was very cool. So it
Awesome.
So you have Hordak, you have Skeletor, you have King Hiss, you have the Faceless One, all very powerful people in this universe. And it's just interesting to see how all of that is kind of lining up, or how each one influences or impacts the other as far as that goes.
Yeah.
What else did you have to say about this episode?
Planting the seeds for Hordak that we will never fucking get. This is what pisses me off so much about this show, is that I don't know if it was Cartoon Network. I don't know if it was the fact that the toys weren't selling and Mattel was like, yep, yank it, whatever. But this show... There were plans to introduce the, and we'll talk about this at a later time, later episode after we finish this, but there were plans to introduce in the third season Hordak, the Horde, all like the whole Masters and Princes of Power mythos thing. Mm-hmm. And damn it, if I wish they could have done that, because
It's funny because when you listen to the commentary tracks on this episode, because there's commentary tracks on all two or three of the episodes we covered today, one of the guys, I don't know if it's Stephen Melchin or if who it was at the time, but one of them is talking about, yeah, if we were ever to pick this back up, well, we'd have to set some rules as far as the power goes and who has what. That's what made me kind of think about that. But it was just interesting hearing him say, like, if we ever picked this back up, or if we were ever given a chance to finish this or do this again or something. I was like, man, we all wish you could. But yeah, we'll get more into that as we get towards the end and talk about some of the unaired episodes and storyboards and comics, etc. But yeah, so we get to see a young Evil-Lyn, a young Keldor, Cronus, who would later become Trapjaw, we get to see again. So just a lot of backstory and a lot of continuity stuff. So this is a fabulous episode for me. I think it's a great way to follow up a good two-parter with not just a crazy hijinks funny Joker villain of the week type episode. So I like that they directly continued with what they were doing here. So it's another five for me. I don't know if this is the first time I've ever given out three fives, but
I think it is. I am also going to give it a five as well. I absolutely dug it. I thought it was great.
I do have a power sword for the Faceless One, because I do like what he did and the lengths that he was willing to go to try to help his daughter.
Yeah, that's very cool.
So I thought that was cool. Evil-Lyn is somehow able to, like, get back in Skeletor's good graces somehow. So I guess she deserves some credit for that. But I just think, yeah, 5 for me. Any rewards or awards or anything else you want to say about this one?
I'll give 1 to the Faceless One, and I'll also give 1 to He-Man, because He-Man is like Evil-Lyn. Like you said earlier, she's an evil war. Okay, she's your daughter. I'll do my best. And he kind of hesitates at first. He kind of has like a puzzled look on his face.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's like, okay, I'll do the right thing. So, you know.
Yeah. All right. So that does it for today. We're going to take a quick break and we're going to come back and tell you what you can expect next from the Powers of Grayskull series.
Do you like retro cartoons? Then Saturday Morning Rewind is the podcast for you. Join them each month as they talk about classic cartoons and interview legendary voice actors like Jim Cummings.
I am the terror that flaps in the night.
Corey Burton.
Sometimes toys can be so tiny.
Rob Paulsen.
Sure, Vane, but how are we going to find chaps our size?
Nancy Cartwright and many more.
Eat my shorts.
So grab a bowl of Lucky Charms.
They're magically delicious.
Put on your hammer pants. Go to SaturdayMorningRewind.com. And be prepared to feel like a kid again. Yay! Once again, that's SaturdayMorningRewind.com. Saturday Morning Rewind was voted best podcast ever by its host, Tim Nidell. So it's gotta be good.
Because the world needs another movie podcast.
The GeekCast Radio Network presents for your listening pleasure, The Cinema Geek.
Hosted by Amanda, Kevin, Matt, and Dan.
Each week we dive headfirst in the landscape of movies as we discuss movie news, play movie games,
go in-depth on reviews,
and even have a top 10 countdown or two.
Also, don't miss our director retrospective series, where we review noted directors' movies, film by film. Bottom line is, if you love movies and love podcasts, you need to experience The Cinema Geeks.
You can find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, or GeekCastRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Terry Smith, the host of Music Talks, the podcast where I ask guests a simple but beguiling question. Choose a song from each decade of your life and tell me why these songs mean so much to you. Guests and listeners love this format, and if you want to find out why, then take a listen at musictalkspod.buzzsprout.com or use your favourite podcast app. Just search on Music Talks Terry Smith. If you'd like to be a guest on the show and talk to me until I'm over, then send me a tweet at musictalkspod. I look forward to doing some music talking soon.
We are back here on Masters of Grayskull, and thank you for listening to us. If you'd like to get in contact with us or leave feedback for the show, there are several ways to do so. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can comment on this and all of our other episode posts from this podcast and all the other stuff we do. Here are all the ways you can listen to us nowadays: Apple and Google Podcasts, Spotify, and of course, the home where our files exist, Spreaker. We prefer you use one of these methods, but you can also find us on any other podcatching client. Leave the show's feedback in iTunes. Please do this. Follow us on Twitter at Geekcast Radio is the network Twitter. You can follow at Pow of Grayskull for the show. I'm at TFG1 Mike. What is your Twitter?
At Optimus Solo.
Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/Geekcast or Radio Network. We hope you enjoyed the Grayskull goodness today, and don't forget to join us in our next adventure as we will take a look at the next 3 episodes of He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, which are Of Machines and Men, Second Skin, and The Power of Grayskull. For now, I am TFG1 Mike with
Optimus Solo.
By the power and for the honor of Grayskull, we have the power.
He-Man. I am He-Man. Call She-Ra and me at 1-900-909-2233.
We'll journey to distant worlds, explore the universe,
and probably battle Skeletor along the way, huh?
Probably, Orko. There's a new adventure every day. We'll also tell you how to get an action figure or this colorful poster. Get your parents' permission and call 1-900-909-2233.
I have the power!
What doesn't kill you makes you stronger.
Okay, Kelly Clarkson.
Hold on, I'm eating a fruit snack.
Yeah, I hear that. Is it a He-Man fruit snack, at least?
No.
Boo.
Some generic strawberry market pantry Target food snack. I don't know why I put that in my mouth, but taking forever to eat.